It's good to see everybody. After a fun day of work, I'm sure everybody's doing good. Hopefully my brain will still be working a little bit. Just to start off our class, just kind of a quick review. We started our original class talking about sharing the gospel with others or teaching the lost. And I appreciate Rocky's prayer because one of the things that he mentioned in there is, you know, how we come to know the truth. You know, those that have taught us. So that's something that's going to be very important to us to remember. I know at times we tend to forget how we started, if you will. I don't know if that's the best way of putting it. But, you know, think about that. Where did we learn the truth? And we all have different backgrounds and different ways that we've learned it. You know, might have been parents, might not have been. We might have been raised in the church, we might not have been. That part's not really... the important part is that we come to know the truth. And there were those that played a big part in that. And we should be thankful for that. And also see how we can kind of follow in the same footsteps, if you will. And not in this lesson, probably in one of the near future lessons, we're going to get into that idea. We're going to see this pattern of not only teaching, because what we started off looking at was just teaching the lost, and that's involved with what we're going to see, but it's not just that. We're going to see that evolves into something. So we'll get into that in some near future lessons.
It'd be an interesting point, just as a one-sentence thing, how did you learn truth? In other words, was it a father, a brother, a girl, TV, you know, whatever, well, I'm not saying TV, I'm just saying, picked up a piece of paper, you know, that got you going. Interesting.
Right. Yeah, that kind of got you interested, or won you in some sense to look into it further.
Only a novel on the topic, but just
good. You know, since we do know the truth, and since like what we talked about in our last class, and we'll do just a couple little pieces of it here in a minute, but. You know, understanding where people are in their spiritual situation, and we know about that. Shouldn't that drive something in us? We looked at our neighbor. No, we didn't. That's what we're doing today. I almost got ahead of myself. I did pretty good, though. I caught myself. That doesn't always happen. Well, we did start looking at our attitude and our abilities. That's what I was thinking of. So we looked at the abilities we have and this idea of, you know, when we looked at in Matthew 25, we saw the idea of this... these men were entrusted with something that was very special. And although it listed, you know, the different talents, well, and when I say talents, I'm meaning money. When it talked about the different monies that were distributed to these men according to their abilities, that was the reason for the amounts. One got more than another because of his ability. One got a little less because of his ability, and then one was a one-talent man. And these were all done because of their ability of handling things. And we see the idea that these first two, you know, jumped right out and did something with what was given to them by their master, you know, what the master had entrusted to them. And the problem with the one talent man wasn't his ability. His ability was less than the others. And maybe it had something to do with the master knowing something about him, might be why he only, why he's the one talent man. I don't know for certain. But what he did with his was he buried it. You know, he didn't do anything productive with it. And the master was not pleased with that. You know, the master said that he was wicked and lazy. And we need to think about that. You know, because we're entrusted with something that's very valuable. And what do we do with it? Do we try to share it with other people? And I think a lot of times we cut ourselves short on what our abilities are. And if we talk ourselves out of it before we do anything, then we're not going to be successful at helping others or be successful in getting better with our abilities. Because it's not the point of that, about the talents, the parable of the talents, but think about it. The five talent man, when anything we do, stuff that we're good at or, you know, whatever, if golf or, I'm not even saying things that are spiritual, just everyday things, anything that we're good at, golf or fishing or quilting or whatever. I'm not good at quilting. I was trying to include everybody in the room. But no matter what it is, you know, nobody started off being as good as they are now if it's something that they really like doing. If it's something that drives them. Now, if I mentioned golf and you're not a golfer, then yeah, you might not get any better because it's not something that really is driving you. But if it's something, a hobby or something that you like and you try to get better at it, then you will, because you're going to practice and you're going to do different things like that. Yes, sir.
Of course, we don't find out about it till later in the story, but the approach, the attitude thing, the person thought of first. You know, the first two thought of was the master.
The master, right.
And serving the master, doing what he wanted to, pleasing the master.
Yes.
The third guy, the guy with one talent, he thought of what's going to happen to me because he knows how the master is and he doesn't want the master to come down with him. So he's going to protect himself, self, self, self.
Yeah. Or at least he claims that that's how the master is. But yes, no, I agree with you.
Attitude. I mean, that's why he did what he did, you know, yeah. Because he said that's why he did what he did. And so as right off the get-go, he didn't have the right attitude first. Start off with pleasing the master and serve the master.
So that's something that's important for us, right? And then we looked at that, talking about our attitude. We looked at the two greatest commandments: love God and love thy neighbor. So, you know, this attitude towards this good news, because without Christ, we're lost, and we came to understand that. But, you know, there's others that might not understand exactly what their situation is.
Even if we obey the gospel, it's still every day we wake up, it's a new day. Every day we need to make sure that the master first, we're serving him. You know, because we still be lost.
Well, because what happens? Well, what happens if we don't, Ennis?
We'll be lost. Hey,
okay.
Lost.
Yeah, because we're going to slip backwards, aren't we?
Probably, yeah.
If we're not careful. Yeah. So, and that's, you know, putting God first and, you know, loving God and loving neighbor. Now, the idea of what I was just thinking about a while ago, as far as loving your neighbor, if we understand that they're lost, then shouldn't that, if I'm looking out for the best interest, shouldn't that drive something in me to try to help them? And of course, when we talk more about these things, you know, here I'm talking about the attitude towards teaching, but also there is our attitude in how we teach. We're going to see some of that too. But I don't want to take away from that lesson too much.
Well, you know, I hear that was important too. Listen, be a good listener.
Okay.
You know, I mean, when you're talking to somebody, it's not all, I know this, I know this, I won't tell you, I won't tell you. It's just, hey, it's, maybe there's something you can tell me. You know, it's a, we need to make sure we get that feeling over to them that it's not just all, I know this, and you need to know this. Even though it might be next, true. I mean, it's
still, right.
That should be our attitude.
Well, plus, if we're talking to them, we might get a better understanding why they believe what they do. You know, just like we've brought up before, because we had to get to the point where we're at now. So that's why it's important reflecting back where we came from. We didn't always know. So we got to be careful on how we approach people. But we definitely want to be able to share things with them. Okay, so that we saw this idea of the talents and such. We're going to start our lesson in... See, where were we? Basically, right after the where we were talking about the two greatest commandments. What does Jesus say about these commandments? We saw that in Matthew 22:40, it says that on these two commandments depends the whole law and prophets. So that shows the importance of these commandments. Let's turn over to Luke. We're going to look in Luke's account, Luke 10. Is anybody getting warm, or is that, if that's just me, that's okay, but okay. Okay.
You're in the hot seat.
What's new? Always hot. let's see. So Luke 10:29 through 37. Now this question was raised by this lawyer when he was speaking to Jesus. And we can see how Jesus answers. And this is going to give some perspective on how our attitude towards others should be. So let's read this, 29 through 37. It says, "But wishing to justify himself, he said to Jesus, 'And who is my neighbor?' Jesus replied and said, 'A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among robbers, and they stripped him and beat him and went away, leaving him half dead. And by chance, a priest was going down on that road, and when he saw him, he passed by him on the other side. Likewise, a Levite also, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan who was on a journey came upon him, and when he saw him, he felt compassion and came to him and bandaged up his wounds, pouring oil and wine on them. He put him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. On the next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper and said, 'Take care of him. And whatever more you spend, when I return, I will repay you.' Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell into the robber's hands. And he said, the one who showed mercy towards him. Then Jesus said to him, go and do the same. According to the text, what three men saw this man that had been beaten and robbed? We saw that there was priest, Levite, and then the Samaritan. Okay. Now, when you think about these three men, not what their character showed to be in this situation, but when you think about these three men, what usually would one might conclude about them?
They're good men.
Okay. Okay. The priest,
yeah,
and the
probably good man.
Yeah, you would
probably man of means.
Okay.
I normally thought of it by society as being special people that would be expected to do what the Samaritan did, yet they didn't.
Okay, good point. Now, as far as when we looked in here, I'll come back to that. Now, what do we know about this victim or this one that was robbed?
He's coming from Jerusalem.
Okay. So it said it was at verse 30. Yeah, that he was going down from Jerusalem, from Jericho. So that could imply something about him. It says that this man was... Well, he was doing that. So was this man possibly a Jew? I know it doesn't say in here, but specifically, but I believe that's what's being implied about verse 30. And when you think about that, this man being a Jew and the man who ended up being his neighbor, it's very interesting. So this is what makes this story work, if you will.
And Samaritans were despised by the Jews.
That's right. That's right. So if this man was a Jew, what does that say as far as the victim? If he was a Jew, what does that say about the priests and the Levites that passed by?
They should help them.
Okay.
Well, if they don't know he's a Jew, I mean, we don't know that they don't know that he's a Jew. Maybe they don't know.
Yeah.
That's stripped. He doesn't have any clothes to show that he's a Jew, and if he's all beat up, maybe he can't talk too well or something. He's not kind of, so we don't know all the certain things.
But I think the point Christ made there is, you know, it doesn't matter who he is, who's the good neighbor.
Yeah, right. No, I totally agree. But when I think about that, you know, that his own people or whatever, that passed him by, and the one that helped him is the one, like you said, that they... Jews would despise.
It's an interesting point. They say, was he a Jew or not? Because in Galatians 5:14, love thy neighbor is there, quoted, and it is among brethren. So it applies to one of their own, I guess you'd say. Just an application.
Alrighty.
And Paul referred to it as brethren. Even if he's obeyed the gospel, he's still his brother. They talk about it, brother, as far as a Jew, a fellow Jew.
And even if they weren't, even this guy wasn't a Jew, you know, regardless, like we just said, that these men that passed him by, you would think they would see somebody in need, and they would help them. That the priest would and the Levite would, but the one that ended up doing that is one that they wouldn't necessarily think would do that.
I think that's why Jesus chose those positions, let's say, priest and Levite.
Right, to prove a point. Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I agree. I'm looking down, so I didn't know if I saw some hands. Anybody? Okay, if y'all have something, just give my attention. You know, I find it interesting because the way it's laid out in this story, it makes it very clear that the reason that the Levite and the priest didn't help him, it wasn't because they didn't sing. Because it points out in verse 31 when it's talking about the, I believe it's the priest, yes, it said, when he saw him, he passed by on the other side.
In other words, he avoided him.
Yes. And then we see the same thing in 32. It says, likewise, in the same manner, the Levite did this as well. When he came to the place and saw him, he passed by on the other side.
The Samaritan didn't just give him some money and say, here, go take care of yourself. I mean, he really took care of him like he was a brother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he went over there and paid the guy, said, take care of him, says, I'll pay you back when I come back. And he went out of his way, didn't he?
Well, think about that. Because in verse 33, it says that the Samaritan was on a journey. So you might think that, well, he was busy, he was focused, he was on a journey, but he stopped and he took the time to help this guy out. And because when he saw him, he felt compassion. And when we look at the end of that was what we see, the one that, you know, felt compassion or showed mercy toward him was the one that was considered the neighbor. Now, and when we talk about what he did, that he, you know, it says that he put him on his own beast, you know, his own vehicle of the day, you know. that's what it was, yeah. So he put him on there, and then he said that took him to the inn to take care of him, and said that this guy took 2 denarii and gave to the innkeeper. And at least according to my footnote, it says that that was equal to or the equivalent to a day's wage. So, you know, he shelled out a little money. He had to he sacrificed, if you will, some of his own stuff. You know, he did that by giving up his beast. He did that when his time. He was on a journey. Just things, little things that are in here that we might consider.
Well, also, to me, he also, if you think about it, he also potentially put himself in danger.
Okay.
Because if this man, the one that was injured and beaten up, was a Jew who despised the Samaritans, and a Samaritan is the one that stopped to help him, he potentially could have been accused as the one who beat up.
I guess that's a possibility. You would hope not.
No, you would hope not. But, I mean, so he potentially could have put himself in danger.
Okay.
But he also went a step further and says he's going to come back. And whatever the guy needed,
check on
him. He's going to pay for it. He'll pay for it. Take care
of him. Yeah, he's going to check on him. Yes, ma'am, Lisa.
I was just thinking also, you know, he didn't stop and say, okay, well, how did you get in this position? He wasn't like, you know, well, did you do this to yourself? You know, or did you get robbed? Did you rip somebody off? You know, he didn't ask questions of, is this your fault that you put yourself here? You know, I mean,
he just saw a need.
They had the same religious beliefs. It wasn't because, I mean, I know, you know, we're always quick to help a brother or sister out, but then, you know, I think that we're quicker to help someone out who's a Christian, who's a fellow Christian, and that here doesn't even come into play, you know.
Okay.
You just see somebody that
And I agree with you.
I know we can't always just help, you know, everybody.
But my point is, it's not necessarily a bad thing to help your brother out.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, we're told, especially though, we're supposed to look out for others, but especially those of the household of faith. So, but I know your point, and I agree. I understand what your point is. Rocky, did you have your hand up? Or
I was going to, the question about was he a Jew or not? course, Jesus doesn't really say, but then you start asking yourself, what is a man going from Jerusalem to Jericho?
Right.
They had the annual feast, and that's why they all came to Jerusalem and went back. Now, the Samaritans be in Jerusalem? No, they were allowed to worship there. Gentiles? Probably not. So, pretty likely that this man was a Jew and is on his way. And, you know, Jesus, the thing to think about here is this story a true story or not? Maybe or maybe not. I mean, Jesus almost starts talking about it as a story. It's a certain man, the neighbor. And Jesus is asking his question, who is my neighbor? And the answer to that question is, it would be the Samaritan's a neighbor. And to that point to be really driven home, if that man was a Jew, that would say, even though the most despised person is your neighbor, the least likeliest, and of all the people that should have taken care of, would be these priests and Levites.
Right.
So, you know, when you look at the word neighbor, we usually think of the word neighbor as someone living close to
right.
us.
Right, and it's not.
But another definition of neighbor is one who's a fellow human being.
Okay.
And Jesus is saying, well, look, fellow human being is who's the neighbor, even the most despised, is the neighbor. So basically, that's all mankind is, and our neighbor is really the answer to our
I agree, because that's what I always think of neighbor as. And then when doing this study, I've always thought of it as mankind in general. But, and of course, includes the people next door. But some of the studying and the different things that, you know, the way we see this, it's almost, in this sense, those we are in contact with, or those about us. You know, somebody, it wouldn't necessarily always be that way, but a lot of what we're seeing here in this idea, you know, it's those around us. But I agree. I think it's mankind. So really, all of our neighbors. So anyone that we come in contact with, we should have that attitude towards as far as them being our neighbor.
I guess to put it in the way we would answer it first, for example, would we consider for us today, would an Arab, a Muslim, you know, be our neighbor? And to ask the question, yes, that's our fellow. That's how I think the point Jesus is trying to illustrate. So even the most despised, whoever you think is the most despised is our neighbor. And for
right.
us, you know, this might hit us too, you know, entire mankind.
Yeah.
Arabs, Chinese, Iranians, Russians, communists.
Yeah, sinners. Well, I mean, because when we think about that, you know, that's a real good point, and I hope I wasn't about to put it here. No, I didn't put it there.
Prostitutes.
Yeah, anything really. You know, and that's the whole idea about this when we're when we're talking to other people, we can't let. Stuff like race, preference, any of those things. You know, that can't get in the way of what we're supposed to do. Because aren't we lucky that God didn't do that? You know, I mean, this good news is for everyone that will, you know, hear it and believe it and act upon it. So that's something for us to think about, you know. So any of these, can't think of a good word, but any of this stuff that would hinder us, you know, that because it's maybe our dislikes, you know, we can't let any of that.
Prejudging
of people. Oh yeah, yeah. Because I bet you there's a lot of Christians that wouldn't have been that way if people just prejudged them in their way.
Oh
yeah, stereotype, and sometimes it might even just stereotype. Some of it might be true. I mean, just because they're a drunkard or any of that other stuff, that doesn't mean you don't teach them the truth, because that sounds like they need it, don't they? So we can't let any of that kind of thing get in the way. Was there any other thoughts or comments?
Except to say what Rocky was saying in verse 36, the neighbor is not the one who got hurt. The neighbor is a Samaritan.
Mm-hmm. Right. He's the one. The Samaritan is the one that proved to to be the neighbor.
That's
right.
The neighbor.
Sometimes the one who needs our help the most, too, is the one who cannot or will not ask for it. You know, in this case, if he was half dead, he probably wasn't able to ask for help. But but it was probably
that
he needed it.
Yeah.
you know, and like you just said, it's the drunkard and you know, the ones that are obviously in sin that need us the most. But they probably don't know it, and they're not going to ask us. Probably. Once in a while, you know, somebody will, you know, but usually they don't know, and they're not going to ask us. And so we have to take the initiative to reach out to them.
That's a good point, because, I mean, a very powerful tool that the devil has is ignorance. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's just lack of knowledge. And it could be lack of knowledge because you have no background or no understanding of anything. Or it could be because they could be wrapped up in, you know, denominationalism or something. And just being able to speak to people and with the right attitude. And like I said earlier, our attitude is not just we should have the attitude to want to help them, to approach them, but we still have to do it with gentleness. But when I say that, I don't mean that means that we should alter the truth. That's not what I mean by gentleness. That part of it should be bold. But the way that we speak to them and the way that we approach them and address them and consider, like you said, and it's what they're saying. Now, if they're saying something in error, that's a good opportunity that we might be able to point them to it. And that's where it's going to be very important that we prepare ourselves to be able to do that, those kind of things.
If I can do a bigger picture, I think we're concentrating on who is the neighbor. But up in verse 25, what is the question? Teach you what shall I do to inherit eternal life?
Inherit eternal life, right.
That's the question.
Alrighty. So, now we haven't really looked at but not our actual definitions from the dictionary and different things. We haven't looked at the word evangelism from that aspect yet. And we're about to do that here in just a second. But we need to think about our attitude now and decide now what we're willing to do. You know, because like I said in a previous class that, you know, we kind of all spoke about what we think evangelism means and this, that, and the other. But that definition might change to us as we study more. So whatever it means to us, we need to decide that we're willing to do something about it. We're willing to help. So we see this idea about our attitude towards our abilities and our attitude towards others. So we need to try to grow our ability so that we might be more capable at helping other people. So now we can go over to our lesson number 2, defining the word. And I mean the word evangelism. Not the word, but just to help have an understanding of it, I first broke down the word. basically evangelism is the evangel and then the ism part. So in Webster's Online Dictionary, I did print out all that for y'all, didn't I?
Yes, I did.
Okay. I couldn't remember if I did or not. So in the Webster's Online Dictionary, it defines evangel as the gospel. And in the Webster's Universal Dictionary, it defines evangel as the Christian gospel. So we see this idea of gospel or good news. And basically this idea of ism, the ism part of it, is, oh, well, according to Webster's Online, that's the one I used on this one. It says that it's a belief or attitude, style, etc., that is referred to by a word that ends in the suffix ism. So with our word evangelism, it's saying that it's a belief or an attitude about the gospel or the good news of Christ. So we can see this idea of a belief in and attitude towards the gospel. And when we consider the origin of the word, we see the idea of a messenger or bringing good news. Oh, there's one part I did skip where it's talking about this. This isn't part. It says it's a distinctive doctrine, cause, or theory. And the Webster's Online Dictionary defines the word evangelism itself as the winning or revival of personal commitments to Christ. Another definition of it is a militant or crusading zeal. So remember this idea of dedication or devotion to the gospel. Now, as we said earlier, you're not going to find the word evangelism in the Bible, but you will find a similar word, and that's the word evangelist. I also put I put the Strong's number on there on the word evangelist, and this is used three times. We said it's used three times, and well, at least in I was looking under the King James Version. I believe it's the same for the New American Standard, but I'm not totally positive on that. I believe it is, though. And we see and understand that an evangelist is a preacher of the gospel, or evangelist, especially when, because one of the places where it's used is in 2 Timothy 4:5, and we know that Timothy is a evangelist because he was told to do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry. And so we see the idea of evangelist being a preacher of the gospel. And this, but this root word that we get the word evangelist from, it has was you pronouncing it?
Yeah.
But this root word is the word we see the idea of gospel, preaching, tiding. At least in the King James Version, it's 55 times that it's in there. I think New American is maybe 63, somewhere in there.
I have people in my family with that last name, Evangelista.
Oh, really?
Well, you're Spanish. You know, people Spanish have that last name, Evangelista.
So We see that's used 55 times. 23 of the times is the idea of preach. 22 of it's preach the gospel. And then there's some times of bring good tidings, glad tidings, different things like that. And I'll have to double check. I think that the New American Standard, I don't think it's 55 on that. I think for some reason I'm thinking of 63 or somewhere in that ballpark. So I'll double check on that. How are we doing? Oh, we should be buzzing here in a second. Okay, did everybody get a lesson 3?